Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. This week's podcast is brought to you by Roca Hemp, where farmers succeed. You can find Roca Hemp at rocahemp.com. That's R-O-K-A hemp.com. And before we get into this week's podcast, please do not forget about the Hemp at the Crossroads occurring Thursday and Friday, February 4th and 5th, 2021. Still got time to get booth space, get tickets, get all the information you need by going to the MidwestHempCouncil.com website. The event is still on. Keep your fingers crossed, and we'll see you there. Now let's get started with today's podcast. On this week's podcast, we're going to talk with Marguerite Bolt with Purdue University. But first, we'll get things started with Midwest Hemp Council President Justin Swanson. Justin, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be back, Jason. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's get right to it. Some federal updates going on out there, all kinds of interesting stuff happening. H.R. 8179, tell us what that is and why we should care.
So, I like it. Very succinct. So this is a federal bill that we've been trying to get you guys, our members, to pay attention to. And it requires hemp and hemp-derived CBD products to be treated like a dietary supplement by FDA. So not reinventing the wheel, creating like a whole new class of regulations, but just saying, hey, this is essentially a food product or a dietary supplement. So here are the bare minimum requirements you need to comply with in order to have a legal product. And that's good because, you know, it helps flush out some of the bad actors in the industry. That kind of gives the good actors black eyes, right, when we're trying to advance positive legislation.
Maybe screen out a little bit of that gas station CBD out there.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You know, self-regulation only gets an industry so far, and I think the hemp industry is really plateaued in that sense. And we really, it's rare for a business or an industry to beg for regulations, and that's what's happening here.
And so anything about that bill, H.R. 8179, that concerns you, or does it all look like what you would want in there from the hemp industry?
Overall, it's a very good bill because it's finally calling the question on, you know, how FDA is going to regulate these the new products. It's up to 23 co-sponsors, which is a great sign, both Democrat and Republicans. I just wanted to talk about it today to remind everybody to reach out to their congressman and ask them to sign on as a co-sponsor to H.R. 8179.
And as we always say, don't berate your politicians. Just suggest to them and make them aware that you are concerned and that they should be concerned as well.
That's right. Just, come at it from an angle that, you know, assume they don't, they're not aware of the situation. They're not up to speed on it. And just use it as an educational opportunity.
And again, right now with the national election, still a bit in flux. And I believe, though, most of the House members, most of the Senate members, things like that have all fell into place. Did the election change anything, change the outlook for hemp?
So it's actually interesting you bring that up. In Georgia, there's really the fate of the control of the Senate is up in the air. If the Democrats win those seats, then the control will flip to the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And that means you have a Democrat president, Democrat Senate, and a Democrat House, which, you know, if they follow through on what they've done the last couple of years, would really be a perfect home run for the hemp industry across the nation.
I mean, with a Republican Senate and Mitch McConnell still in there, you're saying that could possibly change things, or?
I think it'd be easier if it was for just talking purely from the hemp industry. It'd be, I think the Democrats have proven to be more eager to support the industry. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily we're dead in the water if it's, you know, a split Congress. Mm-hmm. We've already seen the Senate appropriations kind of include language in their agricultural FDA bill, urging basically what we've been saying since the interim final rule came out, such as look at the testing, look at the sampling protocols. So you're starting to see, this is the first time you've seen the Senate take the lead on kind of prodding FDA or USDA along and getting us through this nightmare in terms of, you know, essentially government overreach. Mm-hmm. So overall, it's a pretty good sign, and another positive sign if, you know, when Biden comes in, it's he's already appointed a gentleman by the name of Robert Bonney. Mm-hmm. And he's been basically selected to lead Biden's USDA transition team. So he worked under Obama and has been a pretty positive influence for hemp at the federal level in terms of policy development. He's also from Kentucky, so obviously a very friendly state in general on all things hemp. So I think the stars are really starting to align on finally getting clear guidance. Whether that's a year or two from now, we'll see. But I've even heard through the pipeline that the FDA has sent comments back on that H.R. 8179, kind of these technical comments. So there is a lot of, I think, scattering going along at the federal level that most of our members are going to be prepared for.
But we'll certainly have to wait and see how that shakes out. Hopefully we'll find out sooner rather than later. And to clarify, though, Mitch McConnell has been a good proponent of hemp, but you feel like a complete across-the-board Democrat administration, House and Senate, would be better for hemp.
Well, I say that looking basically on past behaviors, right? I mean, Congress, when it was being led by the Democrats, I mean, you saw the Safe Banking Act bill pass a couple times and then come over to the Republican-controlled Senate, and it kind of just languishes there. So that's kind of what I base that off of.
I see.
But, to go beyond that and assume it's going to be a split Congress, it's not necessarily a horrible thing, because we're already seeing some of this language come out of the Senate now that's, again, kind of poking and prodding USDA and FDA to get its act together and allow give guidance to these farmers and small businesses on how to bring these products to market.
Well, very interesting and an interesting outlook and take on that, because, again, as all of the political stuff we're hearing on the news, nobody's talking about hemp. So you mentioned the Senate appropriations updates. Has anything changed there? Is it looking positive for the hemp industry?
So for the Senate agricultural appropriations bill, they're looking at and will likely succeed on extending the authority of the 14 farm bill again all the way through 2022. Mm-hmm. That'll allow farmers basically who operate and growing under the 2014 farm bill during the 2021 growing season, as confusing as that sounds, it's going to allow them to take their harvest, their product, and get it to market before it expires at the end of the year. So it gives them a little more time.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anything else?
So that's another positive development. And then we're hoping the House will pick up some language that will prohibit the DEA from enforcing its stance on that interim final rule that came out back in August, I want to say, that essentially criminalizes, processing hemp. So again, there's a lot of positive things happening, and I think it's a result of small businesses, individuals taking the time to educate their lawmakers on what's needed and what's not needed to make sure we have a successful industry.
And again, how can our listeners do that and participate in that?
So if you head over to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, we have some talking points, and we actually are using U.S. Hemp Roundtable's done an excellent job of engaging at the federal level. So we kind of link over to their website to look up your congressman and your senator, and then kind of take it from there.
All right, Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council president. Justin, we've got Hemp at the Crossroads scheduled for February 4th and 5th. Do we have any updates, or are we still full speed ahead?
So we are sticking our head in the sand and our fingers crossed, and we're going to act like we're going to be okay come February. So any sponsorships or boosts that we rent out will just go towards a rescheduled date in person. We're not planning to do anything virtual at this time.
Justin, anything else we need to add to the conversation?
No, I appreciate you having me on. I look forward to coming back on in the near future.
Fantastic. As always, we certainly will. Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin is also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. Justin, we do appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, next we turn our attention to Marguerite Bolt. We've had Marguerite on the program a couple of times before. Marguerite is the Hemp Extension Specialist at Purdue University Department of Agronomy. Marguerite, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
Well, and thanks for being on the program. We certainly always get good information when you're here and hear what is going on up at Purdue University. And let's just start with the, I guess, the basic question. I haven't talked to you in a while, so let's go with how has COVID changed what you guys are doing there? We know that you had to make some changes there early in the year, in the spring, with the applications for planting, that sort of thing. But I don't believe we've talked to anybody up there since then. So how has COVID changed things over the summer going into the fall now, or actually going into the winter now?
Yeah. So one of the biggest changes we've had to make, and you know, it was unfortunate for growers and for educators, we had to move our field days to virtual formats or just cancel them altogether. So We love having in-person field days, especially with a hemp-like crop that's so new for people in Indiana.
Sure.
So we didn't have those this year, which was a bummer. Mm-hmm. And then as a specialist, I try to go out to farms around the state and work, you know, face to face with growers. And we had some travel restrictions in place through extension, which is understandable, but it really limited our ability to go out to farms and see problems firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
Or we had to, you know, be really careful about how we would go and visit farms, make sure there's no face-to-face interactions. So that was hard for a lot of growers who are really used to that in-person interaction or maybe are not so, you know, technologically advanced or savvy. So that was a big change. Later in the season, we were able to do more on-farm visits, which is great for hemp growers because, you know, for many of them, it's their first time ever working with this plant.
Sure.
But that has been one of the biggest changes, just limiting to, you know, completely virtual formats and not getting to have those face-to-face interactions, which I love as an educator.
Sure, sure. And I know you don't deal specifically with the actual licensing. As you said, you're out in the field dealing with the farmers. Did you have quite a few farmers that early in the year this season that just said, you know, despite all the other issues with hemp, we're not planting because of COVID?
Yeah, we did have some growers that decided with the instability of the hemp market, and then you throw in COVID and people's, you know, just uncertainty in general about, you know, are they going to be able to pay bills? So can they even afford hemp products, or for growers, can they afford to add something new into their farm? They decided it was just too, you know, risky of a year to do that. Or, you know, they, in some cases, growers decided to grow anyway, but just, you know, decrease the amount of acres they were going to plant. So we saw a lot of acreage decreases, you know, after March and April, where they said, hey, we're just going to only do 1 or 2 acres instead of, you know, maybe our original 10.
Do you think that would have been the case regardless, given that last year there were a lot of growers that couldn't sell their crops, things like that? Do you think there would have been a pullback anyway this year?
Yeah, I think that definitely was going to happen. You know, we, just like you said, with growers not being able to sell their crop, we would have seen a reduction in acreage, but probably not as much. I can't remember the number. Don has the exact number of acres that were canceled that were originally planned, and it was a lot more than what we would have normally expected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody gets really excited and they're like, oh, I'm going to plant so many acres of hemp, and then realize maybe that's not feasible based on the market and just, you know, time. Mm-hmm. It can be a very time consuming crop to work with.
So what kind of other experiences did the farmers have? Taking COVID away, or I guess you can't take COVID away, it's always going to be kind of intermingled there. But what other experiences and other issues did the farmers have this year?
I think one of the things that we thought maybe was going to be decreased were the amount of hot crops. Now, we had a lot less hot crops this year than we did last year. I think at this point it's about a 10% difference.
Mm-hmm. And for those listening, that would mean there were the THC levels were high.
Yes, they were non-compliant through the state testing. So this wouldn't be, you know, self-monitoring through third-party labs. This is the testing that the state chemist runs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, they just came in above that 0.3% THC. And I think we expected, I think about 20% of the crop tested this year went hot. And I think we expected even less because we had so many growers self-monitoring this year.
Mm-hmm.
We had a better idea of what varieties consistently are non-compliant. but some growers chose to grow the varieties that went hot last year anyway.
What would go into that? Why would they do that?
I think part of it is just maybe hopefulness that it was just a fluke. Or maybe they thought we can self-monitor early and often enough to be able to harvest the crop before it goes hot.
Mm-hmm. Was there a financial benefit to doing that and taking that risk?
There may have been, not that I'm aware of. It could have been just what they found to be available when they needed the actual plants for transplanting, or when they could get the seeds in if they were doing their own starts. So, I mean, that probably had a lot to do with it. And some of these genetics, you know, we hear about a lot. Cherry Wine's one that has gone hot a lot. It's probably one of the most well-known CBD cultivars out there. But we've just seen that it tends to consistently be non-compliant with THC. But a lot of people are still growing it, not just in Indiana, I mean, across the U.S. And that's one that I think it went hot more than any other cultivar this year.
How do you think that'll affect their choice next year?
I think so for the people who grew it. Now, we always get new hemp growers. We've tried to make it really clear, you know, here are the list of all of the varieties that have been tested or cultivars that have been tested. And here's the THC content through the state. We also have, the Midwest cannabinoid database that I know Philip Alberti talked about on the podcast. And so that's another tool where they can go and check for specific cultivars across the Midwest to see how, you know, they test when it comes to THC. And so there are lots of resources out there to try to point growers in the right direction when it comes to selecting genetics. But for brand new growers, you know, there are always going to be ones that seem to kind of miss that or fall through the cracks, and they see it, but maybe it's just not something they're worried about because they've never had to deal with a destruct order.
Right. So other than the hot crops, what else, what other kind of issues were out there this year that have come to your attention?
I think for some of the growers, especially the new ones, preparedness when it comes to finding processors and even spaces to dry their crop. This is more of a problem with, you know, CBD specific growers, but I got a lot of calls about, you know, where are all the processors? I can't get, you know, agreements from anybody. Where do I sell my crop? And this is, you know, mid season. This isn't something that they're figuring out before they plant.
Right.
Finding drying spaces. So not every grower has barn space or buildings to hang dry. So, you know, where are the mechanical dryers? Can I rent space? I mean, these were questions that were occurring, you know, far too late in the season.
Right.
Right before harvest. So this is something that, you know, hopefully, as much as we try to tell growers, plan ahead before you even put crop in the ground, even with licenses having a fee associated with them for next year, before you even get a license, try to figure all this stuff out as much as you can before you put in that, you know, even though for some people it's a small investment, for some people it's a huge investment to pay $750 for a license. So, you know, either way, you're paying. So plan ahead and have all your ducks in a row to make sure you're actually going to grow next year.
Well, and you certainly can't put a price on your time and the effort that goes into it, not just the cost out of pocket. Mm-hmm. But do you find that a lot of these folks that are, let's say, taking that risk or those gambles, are those folks that are working closely with, let's say, Purdue University and the Midwest Hemp Council, or are those folks that are kind of out there on the fringe and want to stay maybe to themselves, don't really want to do the group participation? Or do you see any of that?
I mean, I see a little bit of both. I see people who work with us who, you know, think they have it figured out, or they're like, oh, no, I'll just figure it out. And
we
can warn them as much as possible. But, you know, ultimately, they have to make the calls and put in the work to describe their specific situations to these processors or to locate drying facilities. You know, we only have so much time as, you know, Purdue and Midwest Hemp Council to do those things. And we're trying to serve a whole state. So we, you know, I know, you know, we all try our best to provide resources. And then we do have some people that are kind of like fringe growers. You know, they're a little bit involved in the industry, but maybe not as active as other members, who, you know, maybe thought that things would be a little bit easier to line up. Because we, you know, with all the interest that surrounds hemp, you'd think, you know, there's going to be all this information that'll just fall into our lap, but it's still, you know, a nascent developing industry. Mm-hmm. So it just takes time to build out these resources. I mean, we just got a processing sheet put together with Midwest Hemp Council because it's been so hard to figure out who is actually going to be able to accept material from growers, whether that's toll processing or split processing or spot, you know, market pricing, and they're just going to buy everything outright. That has been a huge challenge. I mean, we have processors in the state, and we know we do, and we've met with a lot of them, but figuring out if they actually have the ability to work with, you know, everyone who's growing in the state has been the challenge. And maybe the reason why it's been so hard to get like a concrete processing list, but we do finally have one. So,
well, results are great, and you can certainly pull a lot of information out of the results from year to year. Of course, we're only in after our second year here. So, again, talk a little bit about the research that went into this year and what you guys gleaned from that as opposed to last year.
Yeah, so we, as like kind of a Purdue Hemp group, had a large grant through the USDA, and it was an organic focus grant. And that was the first year, this was the first year of data collection. So that hasn't been analyzed, but it was a comparison, you know, between cover crops and then grain hemp and fiber hemp. And then they're going to be rotated out with more traditional row crops like wheat, beans, corn. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that we have been finding consistently, and this year really showed it, fiber hemp can do really, really well in Indiana. And it seems like if you can get ahead of weeds and you have a, like a good establishment of the hemp plants, it just does really well here. Mm. We've like consistently struggled with some of the grain hemp when it comes with diseases. So there are a lot of root rots this year that were recorded with one of the new plant pathology graduate students. And it, the X59, the grain cultivar that most growers are working with, seems to be pretty susceptible to a lot of these root rots that we see in Indiana, mm-hmm. in the heavier soils. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that, you know, after so many years, our plant pathologist is saying, you know, maybe fiber is better when it comes to root rots and weed competition for Indiana specifically, where we do have these heavier soils. So that's one thing that this year we really got to see with more graduate students working on hemp. I think there are at least, well, there's three or four working on this organic project, either completely on the project or working partially on this project and another project. And then there are, I think, two more graduate students in other labs working on it. So we just have a lot more active research going on than in the past. In the past, it was just myself and Dr. Leah Sandler. So I think after this year, we'll get a lot more data covering multiple disciplines because we have weed scientists and soil microbiologists and pathologists and entomologists.
Right.
And then, you know, for some of the research I did this year, one of the things that we saw is just, and we've been saying this, but we really saw it this year is, you know, holding over old seed, even if it's stored in proper conditions, just does not work for hemp. It's so sensitive, and we had really bad germination on some of the seed I was working with. And we've known this to be true, but sometimes seed providers go out of business, which was the case with the seeds I was trying to obtain. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't do very well, and weed competition was a huge problem. So these are things that we've known, but we're continuing to see them. So I think we're getting to the point where we can, you know, it's becoming less anecdotal and saying, okay, now we have the data to support that.
Right.
If you hold seed over for 2 years, you're going to get a reduction in germination by, you know, 10 to 40% mm-hmm. in some cases.
Well, there's only so much information you can glean out of 1 year. So having a second year under your belt, and not to mention the added workforce, the added help, the focus on, yes, this is an industry now, so we can add more people and more resources. Mm-hmm. But I want to step back for just a second here. And you mentioned that fiber does better in Indiana. At least your research is showing that. Are you suggesting folks go more into the fiber side, or was that just a statement that if you are growing fiber, you're growing easier?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, for a comparison between grain and fiber, it just seems like fiber has done better. And of course, that has to do with the genetics that are available. But for CBD growers, we did have some CBD plants out at the research farm. So we have a professor in horticulture that is doing some research and We worked with a couple different cultivars out there, and they actually did pretty well. You know, he's an experienced horticulturalist who has done lots of research on crops like melons and tomatoes. So, you know, he really knows how to grow a specialty crop and do it well. So those plants looked great. So I definitely think that, you know, there is a place for CBD hemp in Indiana. And we see a lot of specialty crop farmers. These are, you know, vegetable growers, watermelon growers, smaller organic operations where it's not going to make sense for them to grow fiber because they don't necessarily have the machinery for it.
Right.
And they're in a system where it's highly specialized already. So it just fits nicely in their kind of production methods. And they have an expertise in specialty crops. So they can really apply a lot of that information directly to producing hemp for CBD or CBG or whatever the next cannabinoid is. But I definitely think for row crop production, fiber does really well. I've seen some great grain crops, but there are definitely, it seems like, more challenges when it comes to actually growing the grain crop. But we, you know, do have a more established market.
Well, I was going to say,
So, you know, that's the tough part is this kind of like a cart before the horse.
Right. That's what that would be my next question is if I'm looking to grow, not for research purposes or anything like that, but to actually make a profit, am I going to choose fiber or am I going to choose grain?
Yeah, I definitely say grain is going to be, if you're looking for a hemp crop to produce in this row crop production model, grain is what's going to make sense. You know, I would love to see fiber processing plants in Indiana. And hopefully we do have some in the next 2 years. But until then, you know, unless somebody is building out a smaller unit and they're going to make some kind of product from it themselves, it's probably not going to be like a widespread option for most growers. So yeah, you're exactly right. You know, grain is kind of where it's at for these people who are already used to growing small grains or row crops.
Fantastic. Marguerite Bolt, hemp extension specialist at Purdue University Department of Agronomy. And Marguerite, when we first started the program here, you talked about the difference that COVID has made in the virtual online sort of gatherings as opposed to face-to-face meetings. And but you guys have stepped up and you've created an online course. And I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that moving forward. How will that work and what does that entail and how can people get information about it?
Yeah, so we had this idea actually last year, pre-COVID. So, you know, not that I would ever wish a global pandemic upon our earth.
That would be mean of you, yeah.
Yes, that would be terrible. But the timing as far as developing this course seemed to fit pretty nicely. I mean, you know, it's coincidental, but it's an online course focused solely on hemp production, but this is hemp for grain, fiber, and cannabinoids. And it's kind of a holistic course. So it's not just production information, because I talk about that in my workshops. We wanted to offer something that really covers the industry from, you know, the history and the origins of the cannabis plant itself, to, you know, rules and regulations, the change in history just in the United States in the last 100 years, to things like botany and genetics, which is something that's there's a lot of misinformation about. You know, of course, we talk about production and harvest and processing and all the, well, not all, but many of the products that can be made and are currently being made. And then we wanted to include economics as well, because that's another area where I think growers could spend a lot more time on is actual, you know, on-farm economics and planning. So building out those enterprise budget models, looking at hemp markets, both domestically and globally, and kind of what we may expect for the future of these markets. So, you know, we've been trying to make it as holistic as possible. It's been a ton of fun to write, but we're expecting a launch in January. So, you know, people are still going to be probably kind of holed up by then. So this will be, you
way,
know,
yeah,
an opportunity for people to, you know, go to an online format through Purdue Online, which has done a great job helping me develop the course. So if people are interested, we do have a registration page for this course, and I can give that, but yes. It's kind of long.
Okay. Well, I would assume we would have that on the Midwest Hemp Council website.
Yeah. Yep. I just sent it to Jamie, mm-hmm. and it has information on the course itself, and a link for registration. So just early registration, mm-hmm. and then information about each kind of module or set of information.
And is there a fee involved for this?
There is. Yes. It is not a free course. It's mm-hmm. a certificate program. So for in-state residents, it's going to be $500. So it's a completely self-paced. You have access for 3 months. You can enroll at any time. So you don't have to enroll right when it opens. And then of course, since it's a complete certificate program, there's no kind of prerequisite. You know, you could have no information or knowledge on plant biology and, you know, farm economics, but it is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We expect people who are going to enroll in this are going to be farmers, crop consultants, people in the industry that want to kind of serve on a production side of things. Mm-hmm. So,
well, $500 is not a lot when you consider the amount of money that folks have lost in the hemp industry getting started. But honestly, just the cost of getting started and the research and investments you have to make to do that, this should somewhat fast forward you and put you on the right track. So as you're looking up information, when you do look up information, you have to then verify if that information is correct or not, versus something like this, an online course where it's been verified by professionals and experts, and you're getting this information, you don't necessarily have to go double check it. So time and things like that, having the resource in one place, it does seem like it would be very cost effective.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things when you search a question on, you know, any search engine. A lot of the resources that come up are, you know, these forums, which do have some good information, but you're right. How do you verify if it's actually legitimate?
And we don't want to downplay the information coming from the mm-hmm. vendors out there, but let's face it, sometimes that information is skewed for a sale versus what you guys are doing. There is no monetary value for you other than, you know, recouping the cost of the research and everything else. But it's an unbiased look at the industry versus most people have been getting their information from vendors who may or may not have their best interest at heart.
Yeah, exactly. And there's just so much information out there in general. So if you are trying to cover all of your bases, it's going to be difficult to do that in a timely manner. So that's kind of why we've included so many different topics around hemp. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, like you said, it's a one-stop shop where mm-hmm. they can go and say, hey, you know, I want to learn about production and management of this crop, but it's also going to serve me to understand genetics. So I know what I'm buying mm-hmm. and what it means when a company is, you know, trying to sell me something and they give me, you know, the sheet of information on these genetics, and I can actually understand all the lingo. Right. Because I went through a course and the information is there for me.
Well, you know, the same as trying to get a college degree online without being affiliated with a college and just think, I'll go to Google and learn everything I need to learn. Odds are you're going to spend more time and get more misinformation than right information. And that's why we have universities, colleges, and secondary schools, things like that. So certainly something that people can invest in and know it's a smart investment. And again, this will be available at some time in January, you say?
Yes. The launch date is January 18th.
Okay, fantastic. So obviously people will have more opportunity to give information and let them know that that's coming and mm-hmm. Where they can get that. As we said, that should be on the Midwest Hemp Council website, at least the contact to you. But they keeping our fingers crossed here, there should be an opportunity to get together for the Hemp at the Crossroads coming up the first of next year. And again, things are a little bit foggy right now, but we're forging ahead, assuming that things are going to open up and have that Hemp at the Crossroads, and you'll be there with some great information as well.
Yes, I will be there, hopefully with some other university researchers from both Purdue, Michigan State, University of Illinois, University of Wisconsin, and then Vincennes University. We're hoping to get Dr. Chuck Mansfield up here to talk about the last couple years of data he's been collecting, because I think he's going to have some really exciting things to present. But yeah, we're going to definitely talk about the organic project, talk about ongoing research at Purdue, some preliminary data, as well as with the collaborators in the other Midwest states and kind of what they've been doing and how we're trying to work together as a regional group.
Once again, Marguerite Bolt, Hemp Extension Specialist at Purdue University Department of Agronomy. Marguerite, anything else that we need to add to this conversation? It's been some great information, and I hope some people are getting something out of this.
Yeah, and for anybody who's looking for license application information, that should be online at the State Chemist website soon. Maybe by the end of this month, we're not sure, but just keep an eye out for emails from, you know, I'm sure Jamie, myself, from Don, and kind of start preparing and getting your information together for the license application. And obviously, everyone stay safe out there and, you know, be careful.
And let's look forward to a great 2021 and put 2020 behind us.
Yes.
And once again, Marguerite, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. And I assume we're going to have you back before Hemp at the Crossroads. But if not, we'll see you out there.
Thank you, Jason.
All right, and that's going to do it for our show. This week's podcast is brought to you by Roca Hemp, where farmers succeed. You can find Roca Hemp at rocahemp.com. That's rokahemp.com. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, you can find that on the website, midwesthempcouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, become a member, and get that information on the Hemp at the Crossroads Expo coming up February 4th and 5th. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next time. So long, everybody.